Hello, and welcome to the Audrey McGuckin Leadership Podcast. This is a podcast that's dedicated to providing helpful insight from some of the industry's best and most respected leaders in the human capital space. I'm your host, Erica Ritchie, and I am the Chief Client Officer at Audrey McGuckin Talent Solutions. And today we are joined by our CEO, Audrey McGuckin, along with Forbes Alexander, who until recently was the Chief Financial Officer at Jabil, and I'm very thrilled to moderate today's conversation. So let's dive into this. Forbes, before we get started, why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Hi. Hello, everyone. Very nice to be here. And as Erica mentioned, I'm Forbes Alexander, recently retired as the Chief Financial Officer at Jabil. Jabil is a large multinational electronic manufacturing services provider, an incredible growth story. I've been with Jabil for 26 years, from its humble beginnings in Michigan and in Scotland back in 92, 93. Jabil last year put up revenues of somewhere in the region of $22 billion, a couple of 100,000 employees on a very large global scale. As I said, I started with Jabil in 93. I think not long thereafter, Audrey joined the company back in Scotland also. And we've just seen some terrific growth. We both started in a manufacturing environment, which was truly a startup. We grew that. And then we both found ourselves here in the United States, for, 10, 20 years now. And really grown with the company. And the company's really provided a great platform, I think, for us both. To have grown, and I'm a professionally trained accountant per se, but always loved manufacturing, always loved the people side of the business, if you will, really viewing people really as an asset, right? Our company as itself, while we're manufacturing, we're a service business. It's all about people. It's all about driving the strategy of the corporation. And as I look back, joined a company that had revenues of $200 million to me retiring at $22 billion, I wake up every morning and still pinch myself. So it's been a pretty incredible journey, and I'm just pretty thankful I've been sort of part of that, if you will. Never set out to do it, but it's been a fun ride and met some great people along the way.
Absolutely. That is quite the growth journey from 200 million to 22 billion over the years. That's huge growth. Audrey, I know that Forbes touched a little bit that you guys worked together. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you guys know each other and the work that you guys did?
Sure. Forbes mentioned that we worked together very early on in Jabil, and in fact, I have a very vivid recollection of Forbes interviewing me for the role 25 years ago, and then actually hired me. I was working in a local factory at the time, putting parts on a printed circuit board and trying to really crawl my way up into the human resource space. And there was a role in Jabil, and it was, I think, I had to make the coffee and I had to answer the phone. But I made really darn good coffee, and I answered that phone really well. I think our listeners know a little bit of my story. Forbes said it was an incredible journey for him, and it was an equally incredible journey for me. I left school at 16 in the Margaret Thatcher era, which meant I couldn't afford to go to university. But when I joined Jabil, they find talent and potential in the least obvious places. So the person that was making the coffee and answering the phones got to get a four-year business degree at Glasgow University, followed by a master's as part of my early journey at Jabil. And then I followed Forbes to Florida, and when I put my foot on the tarmac in St. Pete, I knew I was home, and this is where I've called home for the last 20-something years. So Forbes and I have a lot of history together. We go back, and one of the things you said, Forbes, is it's been an incredible journey for you, and you wouldn't change it. It's been an incredible journey for me. And one of the things that we try and do as part of our company is we try and recreate those incredible journeys, but we're not doing them over 20 years. The world we live in is much more agile, but this notion of journey management is huge for us in the work we do with our clients. So I'm honoured that you're on this session, Forbes. You kind of know that I like to call it how it is, and our listeners, they like to just get a peek into what we're doing and how we're doing it, right? And not have it all polished and necessarily buttoned up. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for being vulnerable and sharing your story as we go. And I'm looking forward to a great session.
All right. Well, let's dive into this a little bit deeper. So we have found that the biggest problem that our clients have is bridging the gap between their stated strategy and getting to the promised value. So we know that 9 out of 10 companies fail to execute their strategy. And we also know that the majority of the time it comes down to leadership and talent. Companies can focus on the technical aspect instead of the human aspect. For example, maybe a company will implement new AI technology without the people and infrastructure to support that kind of change in their business. So this is far from a simple and easy issue. And I know our listeners would love to hear from both of you on this topic, as this is a huge part of the journey that you guys went through. So Forbes, I know from the conversations I've had with Audrey that you found yourself right in the middle of something like this. So can you share with our listeners a time in your journey at Jabil where you saw engaging people to get to the promised value of the strategy play out, and how you and Audrey worked on this together?
Yeah, sure, Erica. I mean, it's an ongoing process, I think. So rather than defining, you know, one specific instance or one point in time, if one thinks about, an enterprise, an organization, no matter its size, right, and a stated strategy, that strategy is going to evolve, you know, as one moves forward. And certainly, as I've thought about, you know, experiences in Jabil where you know, I've spent at least 20 years with Audrey as we've gone through these various phases of growth strategy, right? It's how do you ensure that you have the right processes, systems, information, and people and talent to drive that? And very early on in my career, it became very clear to me that the people and the talent piece is really foundational. Okay, truly foundational. Because as a leader, you can't do it all on your own, if you will, but you need to build appropriate teams. You need to lead from the front and build those teams. And those teams will evolve over time, just as technology evolves, systems evolve. You know, if we think about the last decade, right? And I have to sort of remind myself of this. 10 years ago, we didn't have iPhones, right? But a large number of us, not myself, because I've got a few years on me, but, you know, generation coming in today, well, what do you mean you never had one of these? You know, when we started Jabil, when Audrey and I started at Jabil, the internet didn't exist, right? But it didn't, right? It's 92, 93. So things are evolving. So if you think about your organization today, no matter if it's a service set, a manufacturing company, whatever it might be, the skill sets are changing, right? People are changing. Having said that, I think there's some fundamental things around human nature and people that remain a constant over life, right? And by deploying tools, some of the work that Audrey led me into really, really accelerated our strategy. And, I don't know if I've ever said this directly to Audrey, but she does an incredible job of keeping one honest, if you will, along the journey, right? Make yourself look hard in the mirror around, are we doing the right thing, right, with people in particular? Have those hard conversations, you know, if you need to have those. Support teams. Change management is very, very difficult. And delivering a strategy, to a larger degree, in my opinion, is about change management, right? So, you know, I would say rather than focusing on a specific area, generally, this is a journey. People will evolve across that journey, no matter what type of organization you're in. And to, I think as a leader, one's goal is to support your team, grow your team to help deliver the strategy. You're only as successful as the team around you. That's been my philosophy. So on occasion, as I said, you know, you need to have a hard conversation. Maybe individual A is not fit for that next level, but there's still a role in the team. I played a lot of sport when I was younger. So I always use sports analogies, so apologies, but that's the analogies I give. You know, if one looks at a soccer team or a football team here in the US, right? We don't need 11 strikers, right? We don't need 11 quarterbacks, right? We need position players. We need individuals that will contribute to the success of the team as a whole, which ultimately drives to the overall strategy. So, you know, that's some of my philosophy, some of my background. As I say, you know, in my work with Audrey, you know, she was very key in delivering those approaches and delivering the tools with us, and frankly, keeping myself and my management team honest along the way.
Audrey, do you have anything to add to some of the work that you and Forbes did?
Yeah, so Forbes, thank you for the being so gracious around holding the mirror up. I don't know if I was always that subtle, but there we are. I think, you know, there was a couple of things that Forbes talked about, you know, and one of the things was this humanistic aspect of the work that we do around strategy execution. And so the team here at the team here that works with our other clients, we are very focused on let's not be too far along the spectrum from a data perspective, but let's not be too far along the spectrum for us from a soft people perspective. Mm-hmm. But let's really find that sweet spot. Where is the sweet spot, and where is the moment of truth that will really help us to execute the strategy? And what we mean by that is, Forbes, you'll remember that we did, you talked about tools. We created a tool set.
Yep.
But that tool set didn't sit in isolation. We got around the table and we brought the tool set to the table, but we brought a perspective to the table as well. Mm-hmm. And that's this whole thing that I talk about is data times a conversation equals an insight. And so unless we can get to the insights, the data is meaningless. Unless we bring the data to the table, the conversation can be abstract.
Audrey, if I may just add there, you know, a really good specific example of that, when you talk about data times conversation, I recall, and I'm really pleased to hear and see it ongoing in a number of organizations I'm involved with, be that here at Jabil or a couple other boards. You know, I sit on a couple of boards of other companies where I'm seeing this work ongoing, and frankly, it's a conversation in boardrooms now as well, right? And these are public corporations, so it's really quite gratifying that I'm sitting there listening to this, going, "Oh, I recognize some of this and can actually add value in that process." But put that aside. Specific example here was, if you recall, Audrey, we used the predictive index tools, right? Which for listeners. Is a very, very simple tool that allows an individual to understand, I'll call it strengths and weaknesses, right? There's four data points, strengths, as their self-being and the environment. Because again, you know, we talked about change, we talked about, you know, stress that puts on an individual or not, et cetera, et cetera. I recall doing that, and I was a little bit of a naysayer, I must admit, to start. Now I'm a full convert, right? I went, wow, that truly is me. Oh my goodness, right? how can this possibly work? So we then did that with our leadership team and our teams individually. Then we pulled everyone together in a room and blindly, you know, and took the names off, PI indexes, as we call them, right? The indexes, the results, and shared with them with the team and said, who do you think that is? And that was so powerful, because then team members understood what was driving another individual in the team. And to this day, somewhat a decade later, whatever it was, people still say, that's your A drive coming out, calm down. Or let me come and give you a hug, because that's your B drive, and I know you need a hug on these things, right? So really, really powerful. So I think that's a really good example of data times a conversation, right?
Gets you to an insight and an aha moment. And, you know, Forbes, what we're finding is that we've talked about how the world has changed, and what we're seeing is change is a constant. The speed of change is significant. And so doing work through teams is the fastest way to realize the value of your strategy. And to do work through teams, you first of all have to know yourself before you can contribute with others. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing a lot of work with clients with Predictive Index, which is really about, how do I really know myself? Am I prepared to acknowledge some of my self-truths? And, you know, how does that show up in a team environment? Because it matters. It doesn't matter because it's a nice thing to do. It matters because that's how we get to executing the strategy.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, as a leader, as I said, I was very much a naysayer up front, right? But that's about being vulnerable, if you will, right? As a leader, which is tough, right? And you know, that's that. You know, I said earlier about, you know, looking hard in the mirror. I think that's sort of the first phase, right? Is acceptance of, yeah, this is a weakness, this is a strength, whatever it might be. And then the having the confidence, I think, to and self-awareness to share that with your team, right? And getting everyone on board. And that's certainly always been my philosophy. But I think, you know, to your point, Audrey, that is pretty critical, right? And then what happens is, you're very, very much then involving your team, you know, as part of that strategy. So I'm not a leader that says, we're going over here, right? I know we're going to, I know you've heard me say this before, Audrey, you know, we're going to this zip code or this county, right? Or this state. That's where we're headed. I can't give you the street address. We'll all collaboratively work together to determine that. But here's the big goal. And how as a team are we going to get there? And again, you know, I go back to my sports analogies. That's what makes teams successful. They play off each other, right? They understand each other's strengths and weaknesses. You turn to pass the ball, and your teammate's right there, right? So I think, you know, from a leadership perspective, it's being willing to really, I think, open oneself to understanding oneself and then feeding that down through the team and having the team, you know, buy in as well, which isn't always easy.
Yeah. I mean, I think just to, you know, Forbes, I like to link and label things. Mm. What I think I've heard you say in just over the last couple of minutes is, you know, a lot about team, but this notion of leadership and followership. Mm-hmm. So how do you... How do you create a level of followership with people on your team? And where are those moments of truth when you're going to have to step up and be that leader that your team needs you to be? And, you know, you gave some examples of, you know, I point them in the direction. You never said this, but, you know, I'm not micromanaging them. I'm trying to inspire. And sometimes how you inspire is to be vulnerable. And how you become vulnerable is you first have to know yourself. And so a lot of the work that we're doing with clients right now is taking them on this leadership journey And part of it is you first have to work on yourself before you can work on others. So no matter what role you're in, if I like working with CFOs, I have a soft spot in my heart for CFOs, but no matter what role you're in the organization, whether you're at a C level or whether you're at a functional manager level, where the magic happens is when you first work on yourself. You know, I remember, and I'm sure the CEO at Jabil wouldn't mind me telling this story, but I remember maybe it was 15 years ago when we first started on a journey, which was, you know, we're going to go on this journey, and part of that is that you leaders need to have some feedback. And so he said, I think that's a great idea, Audrey. Yeah, let's do that. And so why don't we start with the ops managers? I said, I don't think so. I think we need to start with you. And he said, okay then, let's do that. And I mean, I think he would, if he was in our conversation today, you know, I think he would say that that was a moment of truth for him. He got some pivotal feedback that caused him to change, which is first work on yourself before others. And you know, that I think that speaks to we have certain principles in the firm, and and one of those principles is, you know, starting at the right place, and helping an organization see what the right place is, and really having the courage to be able to say the ops manager's not the right place to start, you're the right place to start. So that just came to mind for me, Forbes, as you were talking.
No, I'd agree with you, because, you know, you in these senior roles, right, and it doesn't matter if you're a company of 200,000 people or 20 people, people look up, right? Every day, as a leader of an organization, people are looking at you, whether you physically see them or not, right? They're looking at you, they're thinking about it, they're observing what they see, right? It's somewhat like being like a parent, right? So, I think it. My strong opinion and belief system is it starts at the top. If employees want to employ tools for, you know, their self-diagnosis, that's great. But in an organization, it's got to start at the top. That gives the organization comfort and confidence. Wow, I'm seeing the boss do it, or whatever. You know, I'm seeing the leadership team. It's supporting the change management. It's supporting the strategy that we're trying to deliver. And then I think ongoing feedback is really important. This can be a little bit controversial, what I'm going to say next, but I'll say it. I'm straightforward. You've known me a long time. We're both very straightforward. Performance reviews. There's you know, I grew up over the years in a profession, right? The accounts are pretty buttoned up and we've got to have process, policy. Every year, someone would sit down and go, good job, bad job, whatever. It's too late. I go back to my sports analogy. As a coach of a soccer team or a football team, I don't wait to the end of the season to tell my striker he played poorly in game two. It's real-time feedback on the field. So if I look at a business environment, any environment, it should be real-time feedback. So again, to your point of feedback, Audrey, you know, higher performing teams, higher performing people, as a leadership team, you know, I also got to a point with your help of, gosh, my job's done. Because after various meetings, team members would come in, shut the door and say, how did I do? I didn't have to go to them, right? How did I do? I felt I could have done better here. What do you think? How could I improve next time? What do you think was a strength in that presentation or that discussion? So that, I think this is just the power of what we're talking about here, Audrey, and Erica, that, you know, once you start this process, it's all, the momentum gathers, right? But again, it's got to be the top, momentum gathers. You show that you give your team comfort that you're supporting them, right? You're leading from the front. You're doing it, you know, you're diagnosing yourself, if you will. You're sharing those results with people. and you've got open dialogue and communication. It's not once a year, oh, let's go through the formality of a performance review.
Forbes, just a quick question as you're talking about feedback. Did you feel like your team was more open to receive that and to make that shift to for ongoing feedback because you were also receiving ongoing feedback and it was not just something you were prescribing to them, but it was something you were partaking in as well?
Yeah, I believe so, right? It's not, it's you know, call it vulnerability, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the word I've used. It, you know, I took a big deep breath when my PI went up, right? Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. but I think the positive thing about it was, thankfully, it wasn't too negative. You know, I got a thick skin and, you know, life's too short not to joke around and as well as get the job done. And we have fun with it. It's making sure that people did understand what it meant, right? Rather than just, here's a set of data, right? So they weren't trained per se, but they understood theirs. They understood what it meant, right? So we could walk through that. But yeah, it was a sharp intake of breath. Hold your breath. How's this going to be right? Once they saw that, and your behaviors change as a result of that, right? So it's one thing to say, this is why he acts like this, or why he's wired this way. But there was changes I had to make in my leadership style, not major, but subtle. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is there's some individuals that need high touch. There's others that don't. So again, it's a little bit like parenting. It's a little bit like being a coach of a sports team. You don't need to handle everybody the same way, right, to get the best performance out of them. I know in my team there was one individual, if I didn't stop by on a Friday afternoon for just 2 or 3 minutes to say, have a great weekend, great job this week, they'd have gone home in misery for the weekend. Demotivated, whatever. There's other members of the team. See you, bud. See you next week, right? Enjoy the weekend. So it's you know, it's sort of horses for courses, if you will, as I call it. But yeah, it's got to start. It's got to start at the top. The team comes around that. They feel, you know, I think they understand that you have confidence in them. You understand them. You've got their back. You'll support them through difficult times. You'll celebrate really positive and great times with them. Because in any organization, you know, delivering on a strategy is incredibly difficult. Incredibly difficult. You know, we've talked about how many organizations, and you said it in your opening, how difficult it is and how few companies are successful in ultimately delivering that strategy. It is difficult, but I truly believe it, you know, it can be done. The foundational piece is people. It's people. And, you know, I've become such a, from being this naysayer, rolling my eyes, here we go, another HR, you know, tool rollout, to now an absolute believer, where a lot of interns that I sponsor and bring in, over the years, first thing I do is have them do a predictive index to learn more about themselves, to understand how they might fit into an organization. So yeah, it's just foundational to me in terms of, you know, delivering success.
A couple of things, Forbes, if I may kind of link and label again. The time that I spent in Asia with Jabal and we would go for dinner, and they always like to cook the fish with the head on. And Linda Tan and I would be there, and you know, the next day we would be talking about things, and she would say, you know, this saying of the fish rots from the head.
Yeah.
And that's how I really feel about this work of strategy execution, is if not there, then where? And so that was one thing that I picked up when you were talking. That I think the other thing is, I'm sure some of our listeners are thinking, well, how did I get started? And if you remember, Forbes, we went slow. So it's go slow to go fast.
Yeah.
So it's small steps, get some wins, build momentum. And
so.
Then have the courage to take the next steps and have the courage to grow and expand. And then you start to see that momentum.
Yeah. You know, it can be very, very daunting. And I remember it was daunting on a couple of projects where I sat down and said, okay, I've got this vision in my head, if you will, of where we want to be in 10 years, right? 10 years is a long, long time. So you have to your point, Audrey, I think, break it down into smaller bites, into near-term, mid-term, long-term, but also, you know, those celebrate the wins quickly, if you will, right? And communicate those and over-communicate them. Continue to remind people, I think, of how far one has come. Because with these small wins, it might not feel like a lot on paper, but implementing some of these is you know, it's the change in terms of team performance, right? It's the deliverables that they're outputting, if you will, and it's continuing to remind people. Because I think we all get so caught up in the moment of, oh, no. We all focus on the negative rather than the positive. Or the tactical versus strategic, right? So it's remembering to say, lift your head up, look at the 40,000-foot picture, look what we have achieved. Oh, this feels as though it's going so slowly. Step back. No, you know, we're on track. We're on track. But it is. It's difficult. It's pretty daunting. I think I know it can be done. And it's, you know, this is, hang on. I've got a phone going. Stop. Okay, sorry about that. So what I was saying was, where were we? We're talking about small bites, if you will, small bites, driving that and celebrating those and reminding the team of that. And really, you know, laying out a plan. Now, at the same time, I think it's getting the team on board with that, right? You're going to have some real thoroughbreds racing ahead. Right, again, and you're going to have others back here. It's probably somewhere in the middle, right?
Well, it seems like it has just been an incredible journey that you guys have been on, and it started with knowing your people. Well, it started with knowing yourself, then knowing your people. Mm-hmm. And as you did that, you took that all the way through your journey, and you learned how to speed up. Because now that you knew how to motivate your people and you knew how to care about them and you know how to receive feedback and give feedback and do all of those things, it really created an environment to drive faster towards the business strategy and to really come to a big win on the other side. And it wasn't a one and done. It wasn't a moment where you dropped the PI and the predictive index and then you walked away and you didn't touch it for 5 years. It became a part of your process and mm-hmm. you really began to weave that all the way through. And now I heard you guys talking about it earlier, you know, a decade later, you're hearing it in the halls and mm-hmm. the legacy that's left behind of that, as you guys have moved on and done different things, it's still there and it's still making an impact and Jabil's still growing. And that's a huge win and really exciting to hear and to see. And I hope that you guys are really proud of the work that you guys did together and the impact that you made. So I appreciate you guys telling your story. And Forbes, thank you so much for your time. We're going to ask one last question and then close this up. But if you could give one piece of advice to our listeners, just one.
Wow.
We've given a lot today. But what's one piece that you would say, start here?
One piece to say, start here. I think truly, as I said during the course of this discussion, people are fundamental. People and talent are fundamental to any change process or delivery of strategy. So I would say it's understand your team. Understand your team. you know, there's many, many tools to do that. There's many, many ways to do that. I use one. But listen to your team. You know, if you don't have good listening ears, grow them. It's what I would say. And truly understand the team. And make sure they understand you. And where you're trying, you know, how you're trying to deliver higher performance for the organization you're in and for those individuals.
That's great. And Audrey, I'll ask you the same. One piece of advice, what would it be?
Erica, all of the work that we do with CEOs, it's really facing your fear, right? Mm. What's your biggest fear? What's the worst that could happen? And, you know, I can cite many examples of CEOs or leaders that we've worked with. And, you know, once you can let go of that fear and you can be vulnerable, the followership you create is massive.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to our podcast, for Audrey McGuckin Leadership Podcast. We look forward to our next episode. And I'm Erica Ritchie, the Chief Client Officer, and we will talk to you all soon. Thanks.